Hello, and welcome back to the Dungeons & Dragons Podcast UK. My name is Yasmin, and I will be the DM.
Hi, my name is Samantha. I play Laura Greyvale, and she is a sorceress from the province of Nevalia.
Hello, I'm Colin, and I play Quinn de Greymont, a paladin from Flarben in the province of Gavinny.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I play Ogvar Shawfort, a goat-herding, mushroom-seeking ranger from Kessig.
As everyone enters Stagwick, they are stopped at the gate by a lone guard. The familiar voice of Uncle Al triggers a frenzied response from our companions' young charges, and as an emotional reunion ensues, the party are patient before briefly stating their business. Al extends an appreciative welcome and escorts them in true tour guide fashion toward the town's only tavern, the Heart and Hearth. It would seem that for a small community, the town of Stagwick is truly self-sufficient, with lots of local services and an array of artisans' outlets. It is a tired party that enters the inn and are immediately enchanted by its homely appearance and aura. With a little love in the air and mead on their minds, surely it was time to rest and recuperate. Episode 105, Tarts and Tantrums.
Yeah. Mary gives a kind of a short, kind of amused huff. This kind of, you know, this is very much a pose where she's got her hands on her hips and she's like, kind of huff. Giving him a fond smile as he pelts out the door. She turns to you. How can I help you? I do you require lodging for the night? I obviously no charge. You've returned Ivone and Brady to us. I'm sure there's nothing that we can give you that would equal what that's worth. But
Mary,
do you want rooms for the one night? We'll have everyone's out at the moment, but everyone will come back for dinner. You can have rooms. How long would you like to stay?
Mary, don't worry, okay? We're from the city. We can pay our way. And let's face it, this is a small town. Everybody thrives on business that comes through. So,
No.
Please, we would like rooms. We're not quite sure how long we're going to stay. We have got a little job that we've been asked to do here. But that can wait for now. So yes, we would like meals. We would like an evening meal. We would like a breakfast. And yes, we would like a room for the night, if that's okay. There are 5 of us?
Oh, yes.
4. No, 4, because we haven't got Caddo, have we? He stayed behind.
What about Simon? Is he staying?
Well, he's not really my concern. I'm not being funny, but he's not really my concern.
Okay.
I mean, what you do is up to you, but I'm not too fussed. I think we've done him a good turn already.
Okay.
Might be able to give him. Maybe we'll just book him a room. I would imagine the guy hasn't got any money. I would imagine that's gone. We'll pick up his tab for tonight and his meal, and that's it.
No tab. I insist. No tab at all. You stay here as long as you require. We don't really. Money isn't so important to our community, anyways. We're more isolated, so yes, we do use money sometimes, but we're mostly a trading community.
Okay, Mary, that's really kind of you. We really appreciate that. That's really kind of you. That's fine. I think at this point, Alora would just incline her head and I think she would go off across the tavern somewhere and sit down quietly, take a mead with her, and reluctantly pick up the saucer with a bat in it and take that with her as well. You'll just find a quiet table to go across to. And she is going to sit down, and while she's relaxing, she is going to pull out the book that Esther gave to her, which I believe... Hang on a minute. I need to go... Battling the Bond, How to Understand Bats, was the book that Esther gave to her. And she's going to sit down and start reading the book.
Okay. You settle down to read your book. A book written by Iram Batty. And
Iram Batty.
Iram Batty, yes.
Iram Batty, right, okay.
Yeah. And it's an interesting read. It has a lot of facts about bats, a lot of tips about diet and what you should be feeding your bat. And it generally talks a lot about bat behaviours and how to create a deeper bond with your bat.
Just a deeper mug of mead.
There are some rather erroneous comments, which to you kind of readers, that's a bit odd. But for someone who is called Iram Batty, who writes a book about bats, there's probably something at least a little bit odd about the person. Okay.
You don't say.
Ogvar and Kewin, what are you doing?
Well, we were looking at the piece of paper with the contract on.
Right. Okay, so you're looking at the piece of paper with the contract.
That's it. That's what he said.
Well, I think we probably would have read that between us, and then sort of, well, should we show this Mary, and the person at the tavern's just as good of a focal point socially as anybody else, I suppose.
Yes. Yes, you know, if she doesn't know, she might be able to tell us who would.
Well, yes, exactly. Yes, quite. So, I'll sort of like gather up the bit of paper and. So, like, is Mary at the bar, or is she...
She'd have probably...
I mean, do I have to go find her, or can I just go, hello, across the table?
She'd have probably just slipped back into the kitchen. It did look like she was in the middle of cooking.
Ah, right, okay. And there's no one else out and about?
No, there
isn't. Bar staff-wise?
No. And this is an interesting thing, which you've noticed. Aside from Uncle Al, who was at guard duty on the gate... and Mary, you haven't really seen anyone else in the town. You haven't seen anyone on the streets, you haven't seen anyone kind of walking around. You might have seen movement and heard, you've heard sounds from the smithy, most definitely, but you haven't seen, you know, kind of people walking around.
So, what Ogvar will do then, he will take the bit of paper and seeing that she's just disappeared back into the kitchen, he would sort of like go up with a paper in hand and sort of just knock on the door and wait, and if there's no answer he would just sort of like poke his head round.
Yeah, okay.
Sort of, hello?
Yeah. So you call out and you hear a response. Come in, don't know ceremony here, come in. Sorry, I'm a bit tied up at the moment. A bit of a sticky situation. And as you approach Kewin, are you going with Ogvar?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So as you approach, you can see that Mary is in the kitchen, and it is a beautiful kitchen. It's a proper kind of, I say, country kitchen. It is beautiful. It has, where you've had wood flooring in the main area of this main hall and behind the bar, it transitions to big kind of stone slabbed floors. And you can see a big, big ceramic sink. And it is a massive ceramic sink. It is like a small bathtub. Big ceramic sink with, you know, utensils piled up and, you know, washed up stuff on the side. You can see a big kind of bread oven in the corner. it's just it's obviously the kind of the hub of this kitchen. You have this big central kind of space. It's like a big worktop, and above the worktop you can see that there is actually like a clothes rack which has been drawn up into the kind of ceiling area, and it's got kind of clothes, linens hung over it, and it's tied to the wall around a big solid looking iron peg, where it's just been anchored there to keep up in the air. But as you walk down the kitchen, you find Mary. She's currently pounding the hell out of a piece of dough, which she's bullying into submission, apparently. And she's properly, you hear the big slap of dough as it's flipped up and smacked back down onto the countertop, and then she pops the bubble which has formed and pushes it and flips it, pushes it, just folding it over on itself, obviously to make some kind of bread, you would assume. And she's very deft with her hands. You see she grabs like another handful of flour out of a sack which is bottom on the floor, tosses it across the worktop, getting a lovely coverage of flour before she returns to kind of kneading this dough. She looks up at you and she's a little red in the face from exertion. She says, "Oh yes, how can I help you both?"
First of all, thank you for the complimentary drinks. Most hospitable of you. And wondering. First of all, where are the? I assume, without being too presumptuous, but are you not the parents of Yvonne and Brady?
Oh, goodness me! No.
I didn't think so.
No, she's got a furious blush across her face. Goodness, no. I'm sure you'd probably notice that there's a distinct lack of people in the town. With the way the town works, I suppose it would be quite strange to, outsiders, so to speak. So I look after the tavern in the day. I make sure that obviously fires are kept going and that food's ready for the evening. And I also look after all the children in the day. So all of the children, Ivona and Brady's friends, all the rest of the children from, the orphanage and everyone else's children, they're all upstairs in the upper floors, upstairs. So I just look after them throughout the day. So unless, shops around in town, so the general stores, Stag and Stag general stores, the smithy, Buck's Bakes, the tailors, and Doe's Apothecary. It's all of those places. They're looked after and run during the day, but generally most people here work in the fields. You probably didn't see it because it's actually behind the back of here, but all of our fields extend on this little bit of land here. So in the day, up until, kind of 8 o'clock in the evening, everyone will be working on the fields. So, there's a bit of a ghost town usually in the day, but it'll perk up in the evening.
All right, okay, it's different, but I suppose the difference only different if you're not from around here. It's quite normal to you, I suppose. That explained, and sorry for any misconceptions, but we were on our way here, not initially to return Yvonne or Brady. That was just happened by the by on the way, but quite pleased it happened. We were originally heading your way to partake in this contract, and Ogvar will sort of just lie it down, sort of like probably in the flower, I'd imagine.
Yeah, she kind of looks at it, picks it up, idly brushes the flour off the back of it, and you see it sprinkle back down onto the wooden board she's been using. She squints at it, and oh yes, that'll be our kind of, I suppose, our de facto leader, you could say, the mayor, Richard. He'll be back in this evening. He's out in the fields as well, but he'll be back in this evening, and I'll make sure that, you know, he. Well, I suppose everybody will want to meet you. You're going to be a bit of a celebrity around here. But yeah, he'll be the one to talk to. I mean, if you're looking for more information about the contract, I don't really know about that kind of thing. I'm just good at baking bread. But I can tell you about, you know, things that have been happening, if that's what you wanted.
Oh yes, it, from reading this, it does seem like something is amiss, wouldn't you say, Kewin?
Oh yes, you know, any information at this point would be fairly well accepted and appreciated.
Oh, most certainly. If you just want to help yourself to another beer or ale or whatever, I'll be out in just a second. I just need to pop this in the oven and I'll be good for another 40 minutes or so, probably. And with that, she quickly flips the bread over, splits it into kind of, rolls it into kind of like a very long oval shape, splits it into three with this big metal kind of spatula type thing, splits it into three, very quickly braids it up, squeezes the end together, and you see she kind of scoops up onto like a flat tray and throws it into the oven. Not literally throws it, but she slides it into the oven using what looks like a, if I said, you know, classic Italian pizza paddle. It's one of those things. It's a big wooden thing, and she just kind of shoves it into the oven. And this oven is a proper bread oven. It's this kind of clay. It looks like it's constructed of kind of clay, and then it's been painted over or washed over with something. It's this big dome with this stone, small stone opening built up, and it's got clearly a fire underneath, which she opens a big cast iron door on the bottom, shoves some more kind of coal in there, which she is in like a bucket, a scuttle, and she shoves some more coal in there, pokes it with this big iron prong, shuts the door back up, and then she just shuts the top door in this oven. And you can see it's got this very this stone chimney which leads up and out of, you'd assume up and out of the top of this inn. She dusts her hands down, washes her hands quickly in this big basin, and heads back out to the front. You head back to the bar, reseat yourselves. Are you getting yourself another drink? Mary will thrust more drinks in your face if you don't take something. So you've got mead ale, beer, there's wine. Yeah, take your pick.
Alora's not a heavy drinker, so she'll just stick with...
You're not there.
She will just be...
You're not there.
Oh, right, okay, sorry. Okay.
Shoot, back to your Irambati book.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
We'll be having ale, because there's a... A certain creature that can sniff out.
Yeah.
Sniff mead at a mile.
If we have ale, we're safe, aren't we?
Yeah.
So the ale that you partake in, it has a lovely taste to it. You can taste the barley. You know, it's. I don't know what ale's made of. You can taste whatever it's made of. It tastes nice. It's probably got like a very subtle honey or oaky taste to it. It's very, very nice stuff. You refill your tankards from the barrels. These three big barrels, ale, mead, beer, they're labelled up in this kind of drawn on. You can imagine it's like chalked on, just in handwriting. And yeah, you plonk yourselves back down. Mary appears out of the kitchen. She's touting with her a plate of what appears to be jam tarts, which she plonks down on the table in front of you. She pulls a less rickety looking stool from behind the bar and seats herself down opposite. She has in her hands a cup of what looks to be some form of tea or herbal drink. And she, you know, she looks at you. She goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want a hot drink, or are you fine with alcohol?"
I just raised the tankard. Look, I've been quite good with my ale, thank you.
Yes, this is quite nice. It's one of the best ones I've ever tasted. It's a bit of a honey, nutty taste.
Yes, quite nice.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. All of our alcohols are brewed in the town, in the village. So that's quite the compliment. We'll take that one. Have a jam tart. We've got several here. And she points at the plate, and these ones here, these are and it's a very deep, rich, purpley colour. Oh, blueberry jam tarts. We have these ones, and she points at them. They're a very kind of green colour. Gooseberry jam tarts, and these ones here, and she points at them, and they are a very odd pink colour. Not the kind of, you know, when you open a Mr. Kipling pack of jam tarts and you've got your kind of your deep red ones, you've got your red and then you've got your apricot ones. These are very much pink, like baby pink coloured. These are, they're quite an unusual colour, yes, but they're a local berry. We just call them, they're stagberries. I'm sure they have a more proper name in some big hoity-toity city somewhere, but no, stagberries. They're quite delicious. So, you know, have a taste, please.
Okay, down for one.
Shame they're not good berry tarts.
That was bad. No, that was bad.
They're not good berry tarts. That's a shame.
No, that's bad. Bad. Right.
So, Ogvar will pick up one and gesture to him and say, "Well, in Stagwick, it was a Stagwick, it was." And,
yes.
And sort of like wave over at Alora and not point at the jam tart in his hand. "Alora, there's some tarts."
Pastries! She's going to, as soon as she sees these pastries, book is shut, stuffing it back in her backpack, and she's off hot-footing it back to the bar because Alora is a pastry buff. What we got? What we got here?
Try this one.
Oh, thank you, Kewin. She's going to take it off Kewin.
That's the stagberry.
Those are really nice. Oh, it's quite sticky on your teeth. Mm, yeah, very nice. Yeah, like those.
Okay, so you've all had at least one bite out of a stagberry tart. The stagberry tarts are a really, really nice flavour. They taste a little bit like strawberry, a little bit like blackberry. It's this very much berry flavour. Red fruits kind of thing, like red currants. It's difficult to put a specific label on the flavour, but it is very much a red fruit tart. And it's quite sweet, but it's not overwhelmingly sweet. It is that kind of perfect balance of kind of sweet and also being kind of like a palate cleansing tart. It is a absolutely perfect tart. And it's really, really nice. And in fact, it's so nice, you could all have a temporary plus one to charisma.
Oh!
Oh,
Laura likes that.
And this is a temporary effect, which will last for 2 hours from consumption.
Ooh, nice.
And as you gleefully take bites out of your stagberry tarts, Mary looks quite proud of herself. She gives you a big smile. She goes, "Oh, good, yes, really good. I'm a good baker, but you know, I'm nowhere near as good as old Joy is at Buck's Bakes. I would really, really recommend going down there if you get a chance." You probably passed it on your way up. It's a little kind of courtyard area with the shops in, just before you hit the general store. Joy, she's a lovely, lovely woman. She taught me to bake when I was little. But she does the most amazing selection of pastries down there. I'd recommend it.
Mary, this is turning into a bit of a thing for me, really. We passed through Ironwick some time ago on the way down to Selhoff, and they had some amazing pastries there. In fact, they did their own speciality bread. Iron bread, I think it was called, wasn't it, Kieran?
Yes, it was rock hard until you actually put it into something like a soup.
Oh, that was good. And the pastries from that bakery were amazing. I'll tell you what, you could do worse than get some of these sent up to Ironwick. You know, they probably do quite well with these.
That might be a bit stale by the time she got there.
Maybe.
1 or 2 weeks travel.
Well, yeah, possibly, yeah. It's a bit of a... I suppose it is a bit of a jaunt. But, hey, these are lovely.
Well, I definitely, you know, Selhoff's only a couple of days away.
Yeah, they do well in Selhoff. You might consider, like, sending some up if you can cut a deal with somebody. These are very good.
Oh, well, I'm glad you think so. Ironwick, was it?
It's the other side of Selhoff. It is a bit of a journey. Kieran's right. It might be a little bit far.
Yes, it's quite far.
Well, sorry.
Bless you, Mary.
Yeah, it's probably all that flour.
Oh, yes, I think so, yes.
Alora's whipped the plate from underneath Mary really quickly so she didn't sneeze on them.
Put those back.
Oh. Yeah, I was just saving them. They're just... Yeah, okay. So she slides them back on the bar, but she scoops another couple up into her hand and she's going to turn around and go back to her table where she's abandoned her bat. And she's going to reopen the book and continue to read.
Okay. Kieran's going to turn to... Ogborn goes, I don't know, you can't have a mead because of a bat and you can't have any pastries because she tries to pinch them all.
Well, Ogvar will lift his coat flap again and look down at all and say, I was a little bit concerned. It might have been stressing the stitches on Holland again. I thought they was going to go all straight in there again like the other pastries. don't worry, Holland, your stitching is safe for now.
Better be. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, Mary...
That reminds me.
Oh, no, go on.
That reminds me. Sometime we've got to see about putting some of these jewels on there, Orland.
Oh, yes. I suppose, yes, we can have a revamp and a rejuvenation. A bit of armour and a bit of jewel, yes. Sounds quite agreeable, Holland.
Oh, yeah, sounds great. I'd like some blingy jewels.
We'll see what the evening brings, and we might get round to that.
I think it would really bring out the gold in my buckles.
Oh, yes, quite. Bit of a buff up on the buckles as well, and it gets you gleaming.
Hey. He lets out this really dirty kind of geezer chuckle. Mary's off in her own little world at this point. She's staring quite quizzically at a puddle of liquid on top of her bar, which she immediately starts mopping up. But yes. So.
Yes, sir.
Ogvar and Kieran.
Nope.
You have questions for Mary.
We do.
Yes. So is this thing still going on, or do we need to wait and see? Where roughly is it?
Mary looks at you and she takes a sip of her tea. I suppose we haven't seen any difference. Every couple of days, something turns up dead. Luckily, it hasn't been people yet. But we have lost several cows, a horse, a pig. And it's awful. I don't have the stomach for looking at that kind of thing. I'm all right if it's been, you know, dealt with previously and I'm cooking it, but kind of the I'm not looking at corpses is it doesn't do well for, you know, the appetite or the stomach or, you know, keeping anything down. But no, yes, every couple of days, one of our larger animals, so to speak, is found in the field, in a stable, a stall, and they look like the husks. There's no moisture left in their body. It's quite the sight.
So, without being too cruel, but you say like a husk, I assume that the animal's no good. You say the pig was killed, and you couldn't have used it after, I think.
I personally wouldn't want to eat anything that was looking like that. No.
It's all dried out and
yes,
all horrible.
It was like all of the liquid, all of the, you know, all of the moisture was sucked out.
All of the juice.
She kind of dry heaves a little bit, then quickly takes another gulp of scalding hot tea to kind of try and keep it down. She kind of grimaces and her she's gone quite white, quite pale, and she covers her kind of like her nose and her mouth with, you know, finger resting on the tip of her nose to cover her mouth, and you know, you can see that her hand trembles as she does this. She looks at you. She goes, "It was the first one that appeared. It was one of the cows, one of the milkers. Sweet thing, Gertrude, children's favourite. It was quite a sad day. We had to tell them that, you know, Gertrude was off to newer pastures." And she begins to kind of half hiccup and sob. And she was in the field and lying there and stiff as a board. And when obviously we went to look at her and see what was wrong, and obviously we didn't take the children there. That wouldn't be good, but you know, a couple of us, we went to go and take a look, and it was, yes, it was, she was, it was like all of the moisture from her body had been sucked out, and her skin was plastered to her bones, and bulging eyes, and oh, she looked terrified, the poor dear.
Would Alora be able to hear any of this, or is she too far across the tavern?
Let me listen check.
No, that's a 9 all in.
No, you're too busy with Iran Batty.
Lovely.
So, Ogvar will sort of, you know, sounds quite terrible, really. But just to get us a better picture of what's going on here, are you finding these animals? Because you say there's been more than one. Are they, do you find them in the morning, or is it in the middle of the day, or in the evening, or when? Is there a pattern? Is basically what I'm asking, I suppose.
Well, it's difficult to tell sometimes, but it seems to be in the morning or at some point in the night. I mean, poor Gertrude, we found her in the morning. You know, the cows were left out to pasture overnight, and came round in the morning and to check the animals, and you know, old She was in the field, just on her side, stiff as a board.
I see. And, is there any obviously you have guards here, as we've met your friend Al. Are there any guards on duty at night?
We try to keep at least, you know, a guard on duty. Everything is. You probably didn't see it on your way over the bridge, but there is a smaller bridge near the off to the side of you know the inn, which leads kind of towards the residential area, which allows access to the fields. That's shut off overnight as soon as everyone's in from the fields, and we have the palisade and the river, so everything's shut up. We do have a guard. We've been putting a guard on duty in the day, which we've never done before. We've always trusted that, you know, daylight we'd be less likely to have anything happen. But we have had guards. You know, we're not a military. We don't have a proper guard. We don't have anyone trained in weapons here. It is, you know, whatever strapping, handsome, lovely young lad decides to pick up arms. And brave soul and kind heart and courage of a lion and sorry, I got a little lost there.
I can't remember being on guard duty at any time. I could be wrong. I wonder. I might have an early night and join the. Might have a little shufty tonight, right? Have a quick look around before I go to bed.
We could tie in with the mayor, which was his name, Richard, was it? And he could provide us with a slightly a more official report. And not that George is in any way in doubt, of course, Mary, but. The man who's posted the contract, and we think it's best we check in with him at least. And I'm sure Laura would agree if she was present and not reading a book. So I'm trying to catch her attention, not reading her book.
What? And Laura's going to look up and look over and frown in Ogbar's direction.
And so Ogbar was like wave his arms about, and so like come over here, like point to the stool.
Laura's going to sigh, close her book, put it back in her backpack, and then she's just going to pick up all, no, not all of them. She's going to pick up Rowan, give him a bit of a shake, think to herself, I think he's had enough, and she's just going to open the flap, pop him back into his bat pack on her side, and yeah. Then she's going to wander over to the bar.
As you pick him up, he's currently engaged in licking his armpit free of mead.
Oh, lovely. That's all Laura's going to say. Oh, lovely. Mm. She's going to walk over to the bar and is everything all right?
Oh, yes. Please sit down.
Oh, okay, so... Alora's just going to pull up a stool or a chair or whatever it is at the bar and sit down.
As she sits down, Ogbar just slides the tarts away.
Alora's eyes just follow the plate.
Put them between Ogbar and Kewin.
Yeah, Alora's eyes just follow the plate, frowning slightly.
It's good of you to join us, Alora. We're just talking to Mary here about the contract that was put up by... the town mayor, and I thought you might I'd like to hear a little bit about it, being as that's why we're here.
Okay, give me the potted version if you've already discussed it.
Very short version. People wake up, animals are dead, with all dried out, no fluids inside.
When you say dried out, you mean dehydrated?
Yes, I think so.
Like, dehydrated animals?
Yes, no, yes. Not dry.
That's not particularly normal, Ogvor.
No. I'm glad you agree.
Maybe we should ask Esther. Where is she?
Well, she
Esther
was
is,
here.
Esther is with you. She is with you. Esther has been sat quietly in a corner of the bar. She's got her boots off and she appears to be darning her socks.
Has she not got a mending spell? Esther, are you getting all this?
What was that, dearie?
Have you heard this about the animals? You know the little job that we picked up before we left Selhoff about the animals being killed?
Oh!
I mean, it said on the thing there were bite marks, but apparently that's not quite what's going on. They're being dehydrated.
Oh, how interesting. Was that a tart I see?
Ah, yeah, you might want to try them. For some reason, they're further down the bar. Help yourself.
Oh, yes, sir. Here you go, Esther. We were saving you these.
Oh, Esther.
So try. Like, oh, we'll pass them, so like going round Laura with them.
try the pink ones. They're rather nice.
Oh, okay. I'll take your word for it, dearie. Okay, yes. And Esther quite happily tucks into a tart. And as you're kind of sat there discussing this, Mary pipes up. And she said, there were bite marks in the animals.
Oh. Okay.
Like big bite marks or little bite marks?
Little
ones. Was that just like through the skin?
I didn't stick my finger in there to check, I'll have to admit. But no, they weren't, you know, it wasn't, we've had wolves before and, you know, the odd feral badger, but it wasn't that kind of bite mark. It was like pinpricks.
Oh.
Well, that's different.
Oh. Okay.
What do you think, Esther?
Esther sat there, tart in mouth. Ooh, sounds like a vampire to me.
Did she just say what I thought she just said?
That's what she said.
Well, yeah, but...
She swats you.
Like you said...
She swats you angrily on the arm, Q, and spraying crumbs over you with the jam tart in her hand.
Esther goes...
Esther, did you just say vampire?
You're really good.
What, vampires are good? I don't think they're good.
No. She swallows, coughs slightly as it gets stuck in her throat, grabs your ale, Kewin, downs half of it, smacks her lips. No, I wasn't saying the vampire was good, I was saying the tart was.
Oh. Sorry, my mistake.
You're right.
Well, I don't know, Esther. I mean, you've got an interesting history with the vampire fraternity.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
So, sounds okay. A bit like a vampire to me.
And they're only actually... They're not taking humans. They're only attacking the animals. Is that usual?
Yeah, is that normal behaviour? I mean, let's just take your theory and entertain that for a moment. If it were vampires, would they take animals prior to humans? What happens when all the animals are gone?
Well, to a vampire, dearie, humans are the same as animals. So saying what happens when all the animals are gone, if they went for the humans, it'd be the same case of what happens when all the humans are gone. Vampires are intelligent creatures, dearie. They are not some common riffraff monster which lurks in the dark. They are terrifyingly intelligent beings.
Do they normally avoid attacking humans? I mean, I've heard rumours in Stensia, but I mean, we're not in Stensia.
Well, I mean, preferred is human, I suppose, but... I think what you're misunderstanding here, dearie, is that you're thinking that a vampire is a beast. They're not just beasts. They are humans, but more. They think, I suppose, like us, but they think in a more cold and calculative way. They're not some kind of mindless animal. And you see a side to Esther which you probably haven't seen for a while. This, happy-go-lucky kind of old grandmotherly figure very quickly melts away into cool, cold professionalism. As she's now delivering a lesson to you. And looking at her, she looks like she means business. She isn't, smiling. She hasn't got this familiar, crow's foot crinkle in her eyes. She's completely changed to an elder imparting wisdom on someone. Dearie, they're not... If anything, if... I mean, I'm most certain, almost certain that this is a vampire. Especially with the spawn you found. That would make sense, dearie. But...
That wasn't that far away, admittedly.
No, it wasn't exactly. But what you have to remember is that... This, let's say, for argument's sake, it is a vampire. It's feeding infrequently, but it is also feeding off animals. And in that sense, it is a cold and calculated move, because it knows that the humans settled here will not move that easily. Loss of livestock is far easier to compensate than the loss of a human life. If you kill too many humans, soon enough, the humans here will leave, or they will gather specific defences against your kind. But if you take out the livestock, a cow here, a cow there, maybe a pig, humans will replace those animals.
So what you're saying is it is a constant source of food with humans around?
No, I'd say almost certainly.
Okay, an interesting theory. Okay, well, this is new territory.
Do we need to deal with said vampire, or do you think the townsfolk will be okay?
I couldn't say, dearie, honestly.
Well, 50 gold pieces is not a lot to be dealing with something as dangerous as a vampire, surely.
Well, no. But I believe, if I remember correctly, it was 50 gold pieces for identifying the creature. And further payment should it be required.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Must have misread that.
Yes, but it would be difficult to say whether... it needed to be dealt with. Take, for example, the Nephalia and Junal. You all saw Riker. There is an understanding. Yeah. Well, not between your bat and Riker. I think that might be bad blood. But there is an understanding with the vampires of Junal and the church of Junal. and it is a symbiotic relationship which causes no harm to the people. However, what you have here is very much an unknown. It might be that you could reason with this vampire. You could point him or her in the direction of the Junau bunch, and they might be able to integrate fully and live a decent unlife there. But it might be the case that this vampire is not so friendly.
Feral, then?
No, not feral. I don't mean feral. Feral is something completely different, dearie. You're not listening to me. No. She does. She waggles her finger at you. She waggles her finger at you, right in your face.
Laura's going to look down the end of her nose at it and then give her a sideways glance. Do you know what, Esther? I think you should just have another pastry.
Don't you give me that look, dearie. I've put more than one young one in their place before, and I'm not afraid to put you in yours.
Now she's actually going to turn and swivel on a chair to face Esther and go, "Oh, okay. If you want it to be that way, that's fine." And then she's going to shuffle back round on the chair and
make me reflex save.
Face front again. Reflex save.
Oh, it's getting sassy tonight.
I wonder if I could find where my reflex has gone.
Take a -4 for the wobbly stool as well.
What? Well, it's 11 minus 4 then.
7.
Is it 7?
Too low. She kicks the stool out from under you so you go sprawling on your ass.
Oh, shit. Allura squashes the other two pastries she had in her hand.
No, come on, you two. Let's have an air of professionalism about ourselves, please.
Well, what was that for? That was completely uncalled for, Esther.
She looks at you with complete and utter disdain, turns to you, Ogvar, and says, "Do you like your chair, dearie?"
My chair?
Yes, your chair. Or is the floor looking more comfortable?
No, my chairs are all right, thank you.
There we go.
Allura's busy scrabbling on her side and just checking that Rowan is actually okay.
Yeah, Rowan would have probably already fluttered off sensing the incoming danger. Your bat appears to have more sense than you.
Allura's going to stand up and dust herself down and brush her cloak down and whatnot and grump a bit, and then she's going to pick the chair up, dump it back quite loudly on the floor, and then perch her arse back on it.
Respect your furniture, respect the furniture, and respect your elders, dearie. There's no way to behave.
Kieran's going to intervene and say, So what you're saying is, really, it might be an idea to possibly track this vampire down, have a word with him or her or it, whichever, and then deal with it, him, her, appropriately.
She sends a withering glare in your direction, Allura. Smiles at you, dearie. Have a jam tart. And thrust the plate at you.
No, thank you. Wow, awesome. Aha!
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much. Allura will take the plate with whatever is left on it.
Nothing.
Nothing is left on it.
It's empty. How can I take a tart off that when it's empty?
She was offering them to me.
Oh.
No, you weren't getting offered a jam tart.
I thought she was offering me the plate.
No, you got a withering glare.
Oh, okay.
And as Allura tries to pinch the tart, Kieran takes it and shoves it full in his mouth and goes...
At this point, Allura, she's just going to start grinning and then start bursting into laughter because the whole thing is so ridiculous.
Could it... back up to the subject at hand. Could it be that this vampire, if it is one, is new to the area, because it seems to have made much movement beforehand. Esther, I don't know much about the migratory pattern of a vampire.
It's quite possible. It could have been here for a while and run out of its prey source and looked for alternative measures. In which case, if it's looked for alternative measures and it's going after livestock in lieu of humans, it might be more amenable to relocation.
I must admit, I'd never considered negotiating with one. I just assumed you were...
Relocate it, yeah.
Yes.
Well, vampires...
Permanently.
Vampires are very much like us, like humans. Just a bit more...
I can't remember the last time I desiccated a cow.
Well, yes, I suppose so. But...
Well, yeah.
You know, potato, potato, you desiccate pastries on the daily, dearie.
That I cannot deny. It's been days since I had a pastry, anyway.
You had three earlier.
She harumphs at you. She's less than impressed with your current behavioural choices, Alora. You could probably...
Did somebody mention currants?
Jesus. Oh, God. Right, everyone can everyone make me a... I want to say insight, but insight isn't an option...
Sense motive.
That's what I'm looking for, yes. Sense motive.
Yeah. Oh dear. Oh dear. Oh, my favourite. No. Yeah. Okay, that's an 11 all in.
Remember, you've got a...
Sense motive.
Yeah, remember, you've all got a temporary plus one to your charisma as well.
It's a wisdom skill.
It's a wisdom.
Oh, right, okay, never mind.
Right, okay.
Yep.
Ogvar's got a 4, a 3 plus a 1.
4,
okay. Alora?
Mine was a 12 minus 1, which was an 11.
Luckily, Kewin,
oh dear.
Sense motive, got 18 plus 5, so that's 23.
Wow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh,
get him. Look at him go. Yeah, Kewin, perhaps coming from a big city like Thraben, where lots of people of differing types gather, you know, people from different areas, people with different beliefs, not so much religious beliefs, but different mindsets, viewpoints, and actually probably having a more, a broader education than Elora, who's learnt on the job from interacting with other people while she's been on ships. Ogvar, who's probably not got the most developed social subset, and has spent more time in the woods. Kewin, you know, having the benefit of, you know, access to, from within your noble household as a child, having access to these books, and where, you know, reading probably wasn't your favourite subject, you know, a bit of an enforced education from your parents, you know, general life skills from your brothers, you might have imparted, you know, the occasional pearl of wisdom, probably less so Casper, but you know, Armin de Cass, the people that you've been influenced by growing up, the people in the church, just generally interacting with other families and other people in the city, big events, you've probably got this kind of broader, I'd say probably more tolerant view of different mindsets and opinions. So for you, you can read Esther in this situation, and you can tell that Esther is very much of a more liberal mindset. You know that obviously she's been looking after Junau Church and dealing with the vampires of Junau for many, many years. And this is probably hitting quite close to home because, you know, her fight with Riker, it wasn't a fight out of anger. It was more a formality, a formal necessity. And, you know, there would have probably been, had she lost, which she knew that she wasn't going to, there would have probably still been friendly relations between the vampires of Junau and Florent, her grandson. but obviously with her skill set, she didn't lose. So, you looking at her now, you can tell that she is very much annoyed with what she believes to be Laura's narrow mindset in this situation.
What I'd say, Laura, is yes, in a certain way, we don't do that sort of thing to animals, but if you think about it, you know, we have no problem slaughtering a food source, shall we say, whether it be beef, pigs, chickens, fish.
Yeah, the theory is not lost on me, Kieran.
Yes, but I think that we just need to find out if it's a rogue vampire or maybe one that can be more styled towards, you know, you remember Riker.
I understand that. I guess it's just off the back of what happened to the children. Feeling very tolerant of that sort of thing right now.
Yes, but that wasn't that wasn't actually a vampire. That was a spawn. If we have a word with said vampire and say, you know, this isn't on. These things aren't, you know, playing the game, shall we say? We need to. If you're going to do this, then that's fine. But. No more spawn.
We shall see.
Esther looks at you rather approvingly, Kieran. She doesn't have another jam tart thrust at you, but she looks at you rather approvingly.
Mary, who is the chief cook, concierge, and object of Al's desire, departs her knowledge of the town to the new patrons propping up her bar. Laura excuses herself to the other side of the room and peruses the publication gifted to her earlier in the trip by Esther in an effort to glean some insight into bettering her bat's behaviour. Meanwhile, still quizzing Mary, the boys delve deeper into the disturbance relating to the job they acquired from Contract Valor in an attempt to ascertain what might be killing the animals in Stagwick. Later, Mary treated the companions to some tasty tarts made with stagberries, which were not only well received, but seemed to give them all a bit of a boost. And an uneasy debate about the undead ensued, with Laura and Esther failing to appreciate each other's opinions, the upshot of which was played out in the form of a stroppy leg sweep, a slightly wobbly stool, and some poor reflexes, leaving one of them annoyed and the other somewhat amused. Hey, you made it this far, so lend us your ears for a moment longer if you will. Firstly, we are most humbled that you are enjoying our yarn, and the crew thank you from the bottom of their hearts for your patronage. Producing this podcast is incredibly hard work, and as such, if you would like to support us, there are a few ways in which you could really make a difference. Sharing links to friends and family helps to spread the word, so others like you can find us, and in turn they too can enjoy the show. Equally helpful is leaving a 5-star review on Spotify and any other streaming services, which will help us immensely. Or, if you feel you could go that extra mile and contribute a few coppers to keep our creative juices flowing, you can hop on over to our Buy Me a Coffee page or drop us an email. We would all be immensely grateful for your support in any form. Lastly, we invite you to visit our website, where you will find information on our campaign from backstories to settings. Join our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. All the links are in our episode bios. Don't forget to smash the subscribe and download buttons so you never miss the next episode. See you all again next week, folks.